This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 111 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is the head, the heart, and the beard behind one of the longest running podcasts about Magic the Gathering there is, YoMTG Taps. He is Joe Panuska. Hello.
Isn't 111 the binary code for 7?
The only thing I know about binary is that there was a title of a Star Trek The Next Generation episode that was written in binary, and that Sam Black basically speaks binary.
Because we were, when I had a band in high school and I guess beyond, my name in the band was 000111, which I believed was the binary code for 7. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty interesting that I'm on episode 111.
Yeah, it was totally unplanned too. I'm very glad to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on here. A little nervous.
You're nervous. You're Big Head Joe. You've been podcasting longer than I have. What's to be nervous about?
Well, you know, you get really you go really deep on these things, and you know, I'm not always known for my depth.
Well, I am. Let me tell you. But
wow. Right? Well, we started right on the right.
If it makes you feel more comfortable, I'm happy to break the ice for you.
Oh no, that's cool. So this show is going to air on Monday, right? And that would be the 18th?
Yeah. I can double check my calendar here.
17th.
Yes, the 17th. It'll be out Monday. Actually, it'll be out at 11:59 p.m. Sunday, midnight Monday. Yeah.
So November 14th through the 20th is Transgender Awareness Week. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
I believe so.
I think it is, and happy week to you.
Thank you. I love that you knew that and I didn't. I'm like, it's kind of like when people remind me of the Jewish holidays. So they're like, oh, happy Rosh Hashanah. And I'm like, what? It's, oh, yes, thank you. You know, and then I have to Google it.
And, you know, I just wanted to, like, you know, say that it's, you know, really important for people to be aware, you know, of what you're doing. And so I just, you know, had just a quick question for you. You know, so you're from Milwaukee. I don't know, what's the climate like there? I mean, like, how is it, you know, living? I mean, seriously, how is it living as a transgender person in Milwaukee?
Well, I thought you were talking about the weather. I was gonna say it's 21 degrees right now, so it's not very, very warm right now. But, you know, I'm really lucky. You know, I feel like, you know, without getting too political, I feel like Milwaukee proper is pretty darn liberal and pretty accepting. I feel like once you get into, like, the smaller counties, it can be kind of hit or miss. Sure, but I'm really lucky. You know, I've said it before, I live a very happy life and a very charmed life. And, you know, I don't really have to worry about, you know, a lot of the injustices that my peers have to. And I've got it pretty good here. You know, my family knows, my friends know, my coworkers know, you know, I can be on the bus and not have any problems. I can go where I want to. And, you know, we have a pretty, you know, sizable queer community here. And, you know, there's support groups and things like that and clubs and all that. So I think we've got it okay.
That's great. Well, that's awesome. And how old were you when you came out as transgendered to your family and friends?
I love that you turned the tables on me, like, right at the beginning.
Well, you know, I think this is really an important topic. So
I really can't say there was ever a time I, like, came out. I think I was just sort of always that way. Yeah. I actually like to tell this story. You know, when I was before I was born, my mother had mm-hmm. her, you know, the ultrasounds and the things like that, and mm-hmm. and they told her that she was supposed to have a girl. I was supposed to be a 7-pound, 10-ounce girl. Named Cassandra Alexis. That's the name my mother picked out for me. And instead, I came out a 9-pound, 12-ounce boy. And so even going back to that, you know, I was sort of the gender was wrong. And I can remember being a kid and getting mistaken for a girl, and my mother cutting my hair as short as she could, you know, to try to prevent that. And it just always kept happening. So it was always something that was just a part of me. It was never something I had to try for, you know, almost kind of felt
no,
like
I
just,
figured it wasn't.
Yeah, it almost just kind of felt like my destiny, I guess. Like I never knew life without it.
I just didn't know if it was ever something that, like, you know, you didn't, like, share, that you thought, you know what I mean?
But it was
like,
always
kind of
so
thing.
Obvious, though. You know, it was something that people could sort of just see. You know, it wasn't like I was this butch guy. I was playing football. I was rowing. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, I'm a girl now. And people were surprised. You know, people saw what was going on. You know, so there was never a big coming out. My coming out on the internet was bigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool. You know, so one of my best friends, his name's Ian. I lived with him 11 years ago, back in 2003. We all lived together, and I think he was still living with us at the time, but he and at the time he identified as a woman, and he brought us all out to the bar one night. He's like, I got something to tell you all. Come on out, come on, come on, come on. So we all were like, okay, well, what's going on? We thought he had, like, cancer or something, you know? So, like, takes us all to the bar, and we're like, okay, we're all here. We had there was a lot of us in the house. It was, like, five of us total. We're like, okay, we're all here. What's up? And he was like, oh, I think I'm going to become a man. And we were like, that's it? we were like, that's it? Because, like, you know, like, you brought us all out here. We thought this was something like real major. We're like, you've always been one of the guys. Like, get us some beers. Who cares? And I think that we really helped that, because I think that he really struggled with you know, being strong enough to come out as transgender. And I think that, like, our, like, apathy to the announcement really helped it, you know, be an easier thing for him. And you know, and there are some people who don't have it that easy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're and so I think it's really important, you know, that people know, you know, that there's a struggle, you know.
Yeah, my coming out online, like I said, was much more dramatic. You know, I was a WoW blogger for 2 or 3 years, and I was actually outed. A lot of people don't know this, but I did not come out by choice on the internet.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I was. I'll never forget it. I was. Somebody had sent me an email one day, and it was somebody who's still in the WoW community. I'm not going to name their name, and we were sort of, you know, frenemies, I guess you could say. Like we didn't dislike each other, but we also weren't good friends. We crossed paths in the community once in a while. And he had sent me an email and basically said, hey, you know, I found this blog, or somebody I know found this blog that you had kept a while back, a very short-lived blog. I think I was trying, like, blogger.com. And there were maybe 2 or 3 posts there. And I had talked about being trans and on that blog. And he said, well, I found this blog, and you're basically saying that you're trans and whatever, and I just thought you should know about it before somebody decides to use it against you or somebody decides to broadcast it. And I immediately went on blogger.com, tried to remember my username, tried to remember my password, and I couldn't. And I started panicking, and I was like, shit, what am I going to do? Nobody knows. And my blog was quite successful at the time. You know, I was doing pretty well for myself, you know, in the WoW community. I was supposed to go to BlizzCon, my first BlizzCon. People were lining up to meet me, and I was just like, oh my God, what's going to happen? What are they going to think? And then I decided to sort of take the power back. And I was like, all right, if anybody's going to out myself, it's going to be me.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So I sat down, and my blog was on WordPress, which is still around, actually. And within like 30 minutes, I just vomited up this post and was like, blah, here's the story. Here's what happened. Here's why I'm doing this. And I received thousands of page views. Twitter blew up over it. I got about 95 comments all told, and every single one was positive. I didn't have to delete any comments. I didn't have to, you know, to moderate anything. And to this day, I still link that post. Whenever there's a National Coming Out Day, it's always in October, and I link that post. And, you know, every once in a while, people might leave an additional comment. But yeah, my coming out online was much more dramatic. And it was sort of, like you said, the anticlimactic coming out, where you're so convinced it's going to be terrible. And people were like, And they're like, you're
Right,
still
right.
O, you're still Estrus, you're still good at what you do. You know, we
Right.
still love you. Please come to BlizzCon. You know, don't let this, you know, get in your way. And I was kind of in that place too. And it's interesting because, like I said, in my personal life, I've never had that sort of worry. You know, I'm very open about it with people I meet, but online, I was terrified. I'm like, no one's gonna read my
Yeah.
blog anymore. No one's gonna come to me for advice anymore. And no one's gonna want me to raid with them anymore. And like you said, there was just this feeling of meh. Like we're happy for you, but it's not that deep.
Right. Right,
Yeah,
right.
so that was my experience.
Sure. And you know, I just think it's good for people to be aware that not everyone has it that easy, not
Totally.
everyone, you know, and that, you know, people have to face harassment and you know, and violence and all sorts of things. And the world will be a better place when those things go away, which they'll never go away, but the easier that we can make other people's lives, the better everyone's lives will be.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and I'm always very clear about that, that I'm very, very lucky and that I'm very much the exception to the rule. And, you know, I would never want people to, I never try to say, you know, I never try to assume that everybody has it that easy. Like I'm very realistic about my status and my
Sure.
privilege, as the Tumblr kids say. So I'm very aware of that, and I know I have it quite good.
Okay. So that's all I wanted to say. So cool. All right, so now interview me. My turn.
I would love to. So the first thing I want to ask you is, you're widely known by your screen name. You're known as Big Head Joe.
Yes, hopefully.
where did that name come from? Like, do you in fact have a big head? You
Yes,
do.
actually, I've had okay, so it originated 7th grade, actually. When I was in 7th grade, there were these twin brothers that were a grade ahead of me, Joey and Jordan, Joey McIntyre, Jordan Knight. No, the Joey and Jordan Lawback, right? The Lawback twins.
That sounds
And
like a sequel to the Hardy Boys.
it
You
does, it
liked the
does. It
Hardy Boys, now read the Lawback Twins.
Right. So, they used to make fun of me, you know. They were a big head, a big head, a big head, like used to make fun of me because I had a really big head. And they used to call me big head, big head, big head, big head. And it was like a thing. And like, you know, 7th grade. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, they left, they moved from eight, you know, 8th grade, they went to high school. I was in 8th grade, I didn't have to deal with them anymore. It went away. And then I met my friends Calvin and Elliot Darshakort, not twins but brothers. It just always seemed to happen where somebody would get drunk and somebody would look over at me, and yeah, 8th grade, friends getting drunk, whatever. And he would go, my friend goes, man, you got such a big head, man, you're big head. And he said, hey, big head, hey, big head. Like, it just became my name. I didn't choose this name, but I owned it because I didn't want to like be insulted by it my whole life, you know, because it's inevitable that like somebody comes up with big head. So I was like, well, if I own it and I start saying, hi, I'm Big Head Joe, then nobody can make fun of me and say I'm big head, you know. So I started, you know, referring to myself as Big Head Joe. And that's how that came about. And the only reason why I have any other name on anything other than Big Head Joe is it's become because some dope took it before I could. There's some guy in Canada who has Big Head Joe as his Twitter handle. He's got like 30 friggin' followers and he hasn't posted since like 2008. I want to fucking strangle him. And so anyways, that's why my Twitter handle is so hard to
Yeah, I
spell.
noticed it is OMGWTFBHJFTW. So if I'm guessing, it's oh my God, what the fuck, Big Head Joe for the win.
No, it actually stands for it stands for only Mexican giraffes will take fish behind his Johnson forgetting their weather vanes. That's what it stands
That
for.
was good. Have you ever done improv before? You seem
No.
very quick and witty.
No, see, you can tell I haven't done improv if I said No, because that's bad
I
improv.
would love to see
If I would
you.
have said yes, but that would be good improv. But I've done theater. I've done a lot of theater. I'm not very good at improv, which you would think that like 100+ episodes of a podcast would prove otherwise. But I don't know. Well, I guess I'm not really good at improv in music, because I used to play bass, and I was really, really bad at improv. Like there would be like a section I'd have to like improv like a walking bass line, and I would write it out. I just couldn't do it. But I've always wanted, I don't know, I'm not crazy about improv. I would rather do stand up if I was going to do anything. But I've done a lot of acting. In college is pretty much what I did. I did theater. My favorite role I played in college was in The Boys Next Door. I played Arnold, which was one of my favorite characters. And what happened was, I'm a big guy, all right? At one point, I was, when I was in Texas, I think I was bigger, way bigger than I am now.
Do you
But the
mean bigger in
biggest,
terms of like your weight? Okay.
yeah, I'm a heavy dude, and so like, I got to be up to like 240, 250, something like that, like when I was in college, and I really want. I read this play, Boys Next Door, and I knew they were doing it, and I was like, I really want this part of Arnold. But there was also a fat guy part in the play, and I knew that the director would give me the fat guy part. Because I would have played it fine. But I really want an Arnold. I want an Arnold. So, like, I cut down to 1,000 calories a day. I started lifting weights, started doing all this stuff. I showed up at the audition at like 190 in character. Like, it was the freakiest thing. It
Wow.
was awesome. And I got it. And that's a proud moment because, like, I had to really, really work hard. I had to change my body to get that role. And, I've never had to do anything like that since. And so, of course, I've let it go again. But what am I saying? Oh yeah, so I've done some stuff. If you search my name, if you search Joe Panuska online on YouTube, you'll find some really interesting short films. Total not I was gonna, I was gonna say they're PG, but they're totally not. They're R. But like so I've done some stuff there. But oh, and I was in a movie.
Yeah.
I was in a movie called Isle of the Damned. It's a cannibal movie. I'm uncredited because I asked to be uncredited. But if you look right now, if you go on Google and you search Isle of the Damned, you'll see a picture of a cannibal chief with this big like wooden mask, and that's me.
Wow.
I was the cannibal chief, and I'm actually on the cover of the movie. They did a 3D like deluxe edition of the DVD where you flip it open and there's like this scene with the cannibal chief. Oh my God, a 3D of myself. And I have a shirt of the movie with myself on it, which I thought was really, really, really egotistical, so I had to have one.
Nice.
But no, so what was I saying? This is gonna happen a lot. I'm gonna start talking and then I'm gonna forget what I'm talking about, and eventually I'll have to go, huh? And then
That's
that'll
fine.
be our
Yep.
transitions.
So let's go back in time a little bit. So we talked about college and what you did in college. So let's go back to your childhood. So grew up in
Okay.
Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah,
What
that's
was your
right.
childhood like?
Okay, so and this is where stuff starts to get a little heavy. I was raised by my grandmother, basically. So I lived with my mother. My dad left when I was in kindergarten. And so I was, and my mother, I mean, she, I guess she raised us for a time. But she dated a few guys, and like she was engaged to somebody, and the guy left, and then she started drinking really heavily. We were very poor, and she lost her job, so basically, we were on food stamps, and like I was on free lunch, and and she just, I mean, really, just let herself go. And so, I mean, I can't give her. I mean, she for a time there, she worked really hard to raise us, but then she kind of gave up. And my grandmother essentially raised me and my sister. I don't know who I'd be without her, and she just passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
A while, like September of 2012. Yeah. So, which was a really, really, it's just it's actually a magic related story. We can get there maybe. Because I was at the Return to Ravnica midnight pre-release when I got the phone call, and I was stuck there. So I had to like play cards. And like me and my dad's way of dealing with things is humor. And me and my dad have obviously made amends since he left. For a while there, we weren't talking, and we've been on and off over the years. But I think that me and my dad's relationship is stronger than anyone else in my family now, you know? I remember when my grandmother passed away, my dad, I called my dad, you know, talked to him, and I was like, well, I'm at this Magic tournament, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna play, like, I need something to take my mind off of it. I'm stuck here. I'm getting a ride from one of the people who's organizing it, so I can't leave till 5 in the morning or later. And my dad, in this exact voice, goes, "Win one for your grandma," right? Like, and we just laughed, and you know, and I actually did. I went 301, so I won a couple for my grandma. But anyway, so you know,
Got a ride home.
yeah, it was just, I don't know. It was tough. I mean, we raised ourselves, you know. Me and my sister did. There's there's just a lot of chaos. No sort of order or authority, you know. We kind of did what we wanted when we wanted. Kind of just went crazy and I don't
How was
know.
your
And
school
just.
life? Like, were you know, things were chaotic at home. Did you find any sort of solace at school? Like, was it quieter there?
Well, oddly enough, you know, for all of that was going on, I went to Catholic school. I went to Catholic schools from kindergarten through 8th grade, and then from 9th grade through the middle of 11th grade. And about the middle of 11th grade is when things really started in terms of like my situation started getting really out of control. I got kicked out of school. Now I got kicked out of school on purpose. Because,
On purpose?
because I was going to Catholic school, I didn't want to be there anymore. I wanted to go to public school. All my friends, Joey was in the same school. Joey was 2 grades ahead of
Joey
me.
Pasco.
Yes, and he graduated when I was in 10th grade. So when I was in 11th grade, he was just like my last like real holdout. I mean, my buddy Dave was in 10th, was a grade ahead of me then, but. It was just like most of my people had gone away, and it was just I just really had no I just got picked on a lot, and like people would just mess with me because I used to just wear like crazy clothes, like so like our uniform in high school was dress shirt, dress pants, dress shoes, tie, suit jacket, you know, kind of
Yeah.
thing, like but there was no like rhyme or reason, there was no like you need to wear this color thing with this color thing, so we would just wear the most mismatched stuff. Like I would wear plaid pants with like a striped shirt and like a tie with like little doilies coming off. Like it was just like the weirdest. Like I would just wear the craziest stuff. And like my 11th grade yearbook photo is like me with reading glasses and like this like completely mismatched outfit, smiling just by showing all my teeth, but not like actually. So like when you ask a like 3-year-old kid to smile and they just go,
They call
you know what I mean?
cheesing,
Like
yeah, cheesing for the camp.
yeah. Exactly. I just did that, and it was just like the most absurd. And then you look in that yearbook, and it's just me next to like these two like refined-looking gentlemen, and I was just nuts, you know. And I was doing a lot of drugs, and got kicked out because I didn't want to go there anymore. I wanted to go to public school, but like I was the bass player in the jazz band, and the jazz band at Curly Archbishop Curly High School is where I went was very, very like well re like renowned. We recorded a CD in high school with the same guy who recorded the song "Let Me Clear My Throat" by DJ Cool, which is just random. And you know, so basically, like the music director—I don't think I've ever told this story before—the music director took me into his office one day, and he said, "If you get kicked out of this school, I'm gonna come to your house and beat the living shit out of you." like straight up threatened me, right? But I respected him way too much to like call him out on it, you know. I just nodded my head and left. But I did get kicked out, and I snuck out one day. I was like waiting for it. I just stopped doing my work. So I switched my sleep schedule in 11th grade. So I would go to bed in the morning and get up at night. And so I would sleep all day during school. So I would go to school and then like I would just like go to my first period of class. I'd fall asleep. Sometimes I'd wake up at the end of the class. Sometimes I'd wake up in the middle of the day in that same classroom. He would just let me sleep. He would just leave me. Like I had the disciplinarian of the school as one of my teachers, and he wouldn't wake me up. Like that's just how much I stopped doing stuff. My teacher went, "Joe, get up. We got to take a quiz." And I went, "But I'm sleeping," and went back to sleep.
And where was Grandma
And
throughout all of this? Because was she just not? Was she working to support you guys, or like how did you get
my
your kids?
grandmother, what I mean in terms of like raised us was like emotionally, you know? And she paid for the school. She, I mean, off of, because my grandfather passed away in 1989, right? So she had like his pension and like, and Social Security and all that stuff. It's like, you know, paying her bills. And she paid my way through school basically with that.
But she didn't notice that you were acting out or that you were sleeping in during the day or.
there was nothing anyone could really do. I mean, she, you know, was responsible for keeping me as grounded as I could have been at the time, but she really didn't, she wasn't able to like do
Sure.
anything. I still got away with whatever I wanted.
Was there a part of you that maybe wanted to get caught or like maybe wanted someone to stop you? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you're just kind of getting away with what you can?
No,
No?
at the time I had no remorse. I was very, 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 without like getting into like the political side, I was just very anarchistic. You know what I mean? Like no rules, didn't care.
And you said in a blog post that you started doing drugs and drinking at 14?
Regularly at 14,
Wow.
I tried pot in 7th grade, and I tried beer in 7th grade. I tried cigarettes, I think, in 6th grade.
Wow. How did that happen? Like, how did you get introduced to that?
People I knew, like, you know, like there was this kid. I'm not going to name his name, but there was this kid who, you know, introduced me to like. He's like, "Try a cigarette." I tried a cigarette and like didn't like them. You know, just didn't mess with that. And then 7th grade, there was another kid who, you know, was like, "I got some weed. You want to try some weed?" I'm like, "Yeah." You know, like I was never the one who would go, "But that's bad." I was like, "Yeah, I want to try some weed. Let's try some weed." You know, so like we tried some weed and drank a beer and then like in 8th grade, I knew some people who like they're. You know, parents weren't home till like 5, so we'd hit up their liquor cabinet and drink some of their liquor, and then I'd ride my bike home when their parents were ready to come home. And then like summer leading into 9th grade was when I finally st when I started smoking pot regularly. One of my friends that I was hanging out with a lot was like, "Hey, you know, like blah blah blah. I don't know. I think we were at a party for another friend, and we, you know, they had some weed, so we tried it. We were like, "Oh, I like that was fun. Let's do that again." So like, we got some, and then you know, led to that. And then one of my friends started selling acid, so started doing a lot of acid.
How old were you
And
when
that
you
was
started acid?
14, 15,
Wow.
9th grade. I would say I was 9th grade, 10th grade. I was probably doing acid about 3 days a week.
Whoa. And what made you decide to go down that road? Like, was it all, I mean, did you enjoy any of it at the time? Was it an escape? Was it just because you
Loved
could? You loved it.
I loved it. Yeah. It was unreality. You know, it was what I was, it was the opposite of what was at home, you know? And I loved doing it. I loved, you know, we all would get together and we'd hang out and we'd do acid and we'd watch movies and like, I don't know. At the time, it all seemed not innocent, obviously, but like at the time, it seemed harmless enough, because we were just so wrapped up in it. You know, you don't really think about what you're doing to yourself when you're just like in it in the moment. You know, like a junkie doesn't shoot up thinking this is really bad for me. You know what I mean? Like they're just like this is what I do. You know what I mean? Like it's not like something. Maybe there's those times where you're thinking like why do I do this? But like when you're doing it and when you're on it, you're not really thinking about that.
Did you project your life, you know, too far in the future? So like, you know, people your age are, they're in high school, they're getting the driver's license, they're getting ready to graduate, they're trying to make sure that they've got the grades to get into college. Where were you? Like, what were you thinking of your life like? What were you planning for, if anything? We're just,
I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do after high school. I did not take my SATs. I've still never taken an SAT test. But I'm very smart. Like, I mean, like I got kicked out of school for fail. I failed out of school and then went and got honors at like, you know, in like a public school, barely trying, like barely touched the books and got honors, you know. I was a smart kid. You know, but I didn't care that I was smart, you know, or maybe I thought I was too smart to like just play into the system, I
Maybe like
guess.
self-sabotage. Like you knew you could do great things and that might have scared you a little bit.
Maybe, I don't know, you know, I mean, like, so like we had, I mean, when I was in high school, we had bands, we were playing, I was playing in like rock bands and stuff. And you know, I thought maybe that's what I would do. I didn't think that I would go to college, or if I did go to college. See, this is the thing, is I was partying so much when I was in high school that I just was like, if I go to college, I'm going to do with all these people that I talk to do and fail out from partying, you know? So I don't want to do that. I don't want to like waste time and money doing something that I just am not like up for right now. So I just didn't, you know? I felt like I was. And what I really wanted to do was get out of my mom's house, you know, because that's where I was living. And I really wanted to get away from that situation because it was bad. And you know, and my situation, like in terms of like how I was in school, is not unique. Like my sister never made it to high school.
Really?
Never made it to high
Wow.
school. She was like seventh grade, cutting class, eighth grade. She maybe went to eighth grade. I don't even know. Like she didn't even make it into high school.
Wow.
I graduated high school, you know, I did, I graduated, but I wasn't interested in college, you know, I just knew I was going to party, so instead I chose to party, you know, because I just knew that was like what I was going heading towards
It was
anyway.
what you were good at the time. I mean,
Yeah.
it's true.
Well, that, yeah, I mean that, you know, I was good at playing music, and yeah, so I mean like we were just having fun and being, you know, being not see to me I'm just like we were just being kids, but like wow, what a messed up idea of being kids I have, you know, it's so weird, but anyway,
When did you discover
so yeah,
magic?
okay, so the same year I discovered pot. No, Joey Pasco was 2 years ahead of me, you know, so he we were in the we went to school together from like I think he came to St. Clement, which was the grade school I went to. He came to St. Clement in like third grade. We met in like when I was in sixth grade and he was in eighth grade. We were in the play Pinocchio together. Very lovely play.
Were either one of you Pinocchio?
No,
Okay.
no, he was like I don't remember his part, and I was Stromboli. Which is really a bad omen, but you know, there was like, you know, we got to talking and stuff during the play, probably to the displeasure of our instructors, and then like after, and we started, you know, realizing we liked the same music, so there was like a cast rap party or whatever, and like we were listening to Nirvana real loud at the rap party, and I was like, oh, this guy's cool, hey, let's go hang out. So like me and Joey started hanging out, and then he went to. And we were just like we bonded over like Nirvana and like grunge, you know, basically for lack of a better term. And so then he went off to high school, and you know he starts high school and he's like, hey, you know, guys I know in high school are playing this game called Magic. You should check it out. I was like, oh, okay, you know. So Joey taught me how to play Magic.
Nice.
When I was in seventh grade, he was in ninth grade. Also, when I was in seventh grade, and he was in ninth grade. I introduced him to the woman he is marrying next week.
Oh,
And I am marrying
wow.
them. I'm the best man, and I am the one performing the ceremony.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great? So like, it was one of those things where it was like, he's like, so we've been thinking, and like, you set us up. It's only right that you finish the job. I was like, word, you know? So yeah, so it's going to be really cool. I'm really excited about that. Oh. Like, I can't even tell you. I'm not excited about making my second trip to Baltimore in 3 months, but I'm very excited to marry the two of them. It's really, really an honor. And, you know, just you think about all the, you know, crazy things that Joey and I have done together. This is just another feather in the cap. Yeah,
you have to make sure you take pictures. I bet that's going to be a good time.
It'll be hard for me to take pictures while I'm performing the ceremony. I'm sure somebody will.
Of course. Or maybe before, after, you know, some group shots or something.
Well, I imagine that they have a, what do you call those things? A photographer to do all those things.
You know what I mean.
It's like customary in the wedding proceedings.
Straight people are so weird. God. But they're photographers and their fanciness.
Is that just a straight people thing?
I don't know. I'm just being facetious.
I don't know. I think everybody who gets married has a... Oh, I get it. It's because they can get married. Mm.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. But I technically, because each state has their own sort of guidelines, and because I'm not far enough in my transition for the purposes of marriage in Wisconsin, my marriage would still be considered a gay marriage. So I would, depending on the state, I might not be allowed to get married. Not that I want to. I admit that when I hear the word marriage, my default response is ew. like the first couple times, my friend, the
potato salad.
What?
When I hear potato salad, I go,
ew. Yeah, you know, whenever my friends, my first couple of friends who started pairing off, you know, they would come to me and they're like, so we have an announcement to make. And I'd be like, okay. And they'd be like, oh, we're going to get married. And my first response would always be, why? And then after I realized how badly that went over, I learned that I can't reply with that anymore. So now it's like, oh, congratulations. And then my inner monologue is, why?
Your apathy was not the kind of apathy that makes them more comfortable with the decision.
Yeah, I'm just not the, as Big says on Sex and the City, I am not the marrying kind. So one day maybe, but I like my life too much to...
Can I tell you that me and my friend Dave, we dragged our girlfriends at the time out. This story gets better than what I'm about to tell you. We dragged our girlfriends out because we had to see Sex and the City, the movie, the night it came out. Let me tell you why it gets better.
Okay.
I had Lyme disease. Mm. And I lied to get them to come out because my other option was going to the hospital. And I was like, no, actually, I don't think I have Lyme disease. I think it was just an illness. I think it was just a fever. I think I'm getting better. We should still go to the movie. And then the next morning I woke up and I'm like, I think it's time to go first to go to the emergency room.
Did you actually want to see the movie, or was it just an out?
That bad. No, it wasn't. It was that badly. We wanted to see the movie.
You know, if you are going to bring up Sex and the City, you do have to answer the question, the eternal question.
All right.
Big or go. Aiden?
Oh, man. Okay, so Big, because Carrie doesn't deserve Aiden.
Oh,
she did nothing but lie to him and withhold things from him. She was horrible to that man. She was a wreck. She was disgustingly selfish and awful to Aiden.
You know, it's funny. I like Aiden, but I feel like he only wanted to be married, and it didn't really matter who he was married to. And you kind of saw that in season 6 when they reunited a little bit, and he had that chubby baby Tater. And you realize that there wasn't much time in between the breakup from season 4 and season 6. And it's like, wow, you not only got married in that time frame, but spit out a couple of kids. Like, you just wanted to be married. And, you know,
Or he's that much of a catch that Carrie, in her thinking about only herself ever, missed out on an alternate timeline to go down where she could have been the woman with Aiden at that point.
Yeah.
And instead, she's like, "I'm Carrie. I'm aloof." And one thing I've learned, like from watching this show for like the 10th time is that I really dislike Carrie. Like, I never thought I did. Like, I was always like, oh, Carrie, you know, oh, what a card, you know, and now I'm like, wow, you're awful. Like, really, really awful. You want to get me really excited, ask me questions about Sex and the City.
The only thing I can say is that the more I watch the show and as I watch it through the years, I'm very comfortable in saying that I'm very much the Samantha of my friends. I always have been. I don't see my role ever changing. And, you know, I always feel like, you know, she's the character with the, you know, people are always surprised that I think Samantha has the strongest moral compass out of all of them, which you wouldn't expect because she's sold as such a frivolous character. But she really does have these motherly kind of moments that are very surprising. And I'm kind of the same way. You know, people don't think that I, you know, am capable of that. And I'm very much the den mother to my friends, you know, and there are several moments where I see myself in her. So.
Sure. Sure.
So let's get back to magic. So you've known Joy Pascoe for a while. What'd you say?
I said, why though? We were just talking about Sex and the City. What are you doing?
So you've known Joey for a while.
Yeah.
And this eventually leads you to Yo MTG Tap. So how did the show get started?
Okay. So Joey and I, you know, we've played Magic for years and years. I moved to Texas. I moved to Fort Worth because I was doing the thing. I was, you know, working. I was, you know, working, paying bills, hanging out, just kind of, you know, treading water, you know. For a couple of years, like I said, and my dad, you know, my lease was coming up in a couple months, and I was talking to my dad about it. I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, like, I'll probably start looking for a place or whatever, and all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, you know, he's like, you could do that, or you could come live with me, you know, free room and board, and start going to college. So I was like, all right, you know, kind of thing, and then just came out to Fort Worth. And lived with him for 3 years. Now, me and my dad, if you've ever met my dad is like a larger, older, more conservative, but still just as crazy version of me. Like, he's you put us in a room together and it's ridiculous. It just really is. So, you know, but because we're so similar personalities, we're very stubborn. We're very abrasive. We butted heads a lot and eventually left Texas after about 3 years without a degree, with a 3-point-something ridiculous 3.87 GPA through, like, you know, not enough credits to graduate, and totally wasted it. But I don't feel like the time was wasted. It was a good experience. Did the theater thing, kind of, you know, improve my chops there. Which I haven't really applied since I moved back or since I went to college, other than like doing some shorts and things like that. I haven't really done theater since, which I really regret and wish I could do. Anyway, this is really going in a wide arc to get back to Joey. So while I was in Texas, Joey basically stopped playing Magic for a couple years, and we've been on and off for the last 19 years we've been playing Magic. We've been on and off, never like 100%, you know, no breaks in the timeline. But I met some friends who played super casually. So I was playing super casually in Texas. And then I came back, and then, you know, Joey and I remember one of the first things we did, Magic related, was like we went to Amazing Spiral, which has moved to like two other locations since then. It's a store I used to be a TO at. We'll get there. Bought a box of Future Sight, right? So we bought a box of Future Sight, and I remember, like, I get this $10 card, and I'm like, here, Joey, happy birthday. It was a Tarmogoyf. I gave him a Tarmogoyf, which at the time was like a $10 present, but, like, you know, it turned out to be okay. So we've always done a lot of Magic stuff together. Anyway, very casual player, me, for years and years and years. Then eventually I was kind of like, you know, I want to start playing a little more seriously. I want to kind of build better decks because I was very anti-net deck. There still is the first Psychotog I ever opened in a booster pack torn in half in my binder. Because it was the moment I opened it, I went, fuck this, and threw it across the room, tore it in half, threw it, and just kept opening this box of Odyssey that I was opening up. And I still have that Psychotalk. I've always been very anti-net deck. I thought that building your deck was almost as important of an aspect of the game as playing. So I started to like, lighten up on that. And I was like, I kind of want to start building some serious decks. And I was talking to Joey. I'm picking his brain because he's always been the more competitive player between us. I'm picking his brain about stuff. We're having these like rules discussions basically over G chat. And I just was like, man, like, and we listened to, I mean, we listened to some podcasts at the time. I listened to Top 8 Magic was one of the main ones in the Mana Pool. And the Magic Sock actually was one that I really enjoyed and that Joey did not understand why, but I did really enjoy that show. Just because he would nostalgia trip through all the old sets and I just loved just hearing him talk about the old cards. It was just a good thing to listen to. And Monday Night Magic and things like that. So I was like, like all these discussions that we're having, like it would be really cool if we just like talked about this stuff and recorded it. I'm like, it'd be cool to do a podcast because we knew Tom for years. I'm like, we already have an in with MTG Cast. We didn't realize that everybody had an in, but whatever. we were just like, we got this in with MTG Cast. We could totally have our show hosted. We should try it out. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a cool idea. What would we call it? And he's like, we love music. And Joey said something like, what about like Yo MTG Raps or something? I'm like, dude, Yo MTG Taps. And then it was like, oh shit, now we have to do a podcast, huh? That's a really good name. Like that basically was the name is what made us decide we had to do a show. And it was just a really like just kind of a, oh yeah, whatever. We'll do it. We'll do it, see what happens. So we did one and we put it out. Whatever. We didn't know what we were doing. And then we did a second one. We put it out like right after because it was just random. We were driving to FNM and I was like, I want to talk to you about this deck that I'm working on. So I was like, hit record on like his phone and we're driving. He's driving the car and I'm talking about stuff and we're just like passing the thing back and forth, just talking in the car, driving to FNM. And we put that out, and that was like a 20-minute show, and we just let it go. And we were like, okay, well, one of these days we'll put out another one. And then so we get a private message from Mike Flores on Twitter. It's like, hey guys, when's the next show coming out? And we were like, what? What the hell is this? Sorry, I actually just got a text from Joey asking about commons and uncommons because we're gonna play some cards next week because we haven't played together in a little while, and so we were just like, oh my God, we should do this every week. I'm like, I don't care. I said to Joey, I remember at the time, I said, I don't care if we're only making this show to send to Mike Flores via email. If Mike Flores wants to hear us talk about Magic, we're doing it, like we're doing it regularly, and that's it. So that was pretty much like what got us started.
And then the show gets big enough to where you're actually sponsored by Star City Games. How did
Yeah.
that feel?
I don't know. Like, okay. So, all kinds of things, like everything. Like, why? Like, kind of question, like, why us? And like and damn right us, you know what I mean? Like all at the same time. And 'cause we went to on our own dime, we just were kind of like, hey, Nationals is coming up in Minneapolis. Let's go cover it. Okay. So like Joey flies out to Minneapolis and I take the Greyhound bus 'cause I'm insane. And we meet up in Minneapolis and we're there and we're talking to people and that was where so like some of the greatest moments I feel of the show happened on that trip. And those weren't even like, or wait, am I lying? Hold on. Was it Minneapolis? Were we already sponsored by then? I don't remember. It's all such a blur because I was just smoking so much weed and like, I wasn't drinking so much, but I was just smoking a ton of weed. And like and yeah, and while we were going around, I was getting drunk with people and doing that whole thing. So a lot of it blurs together, honestly. But it was, I'm just trying to remember. So we got out there, and I feel like that's where we talked to Evan Irwin, but it also might have been at, I think it was actually at GP DC, which was in Virginia, not
Let me
DC.
clarify. So, for a second, so you were not only doing your show, you were doing Yo MTG Taps for Star City, you were also doing coverage for them too?
We did coverage
Okay.
later. did coverage later. So the first thing we did was we just went out to cover Nationals because.
Okay, so you weren't doing it like as coverage people like Cedric and Patrick do it. You were doing it as, hey, we're YoMTG Taps covering this.
Right, right. We just went there to do. Yeah, we just went there to do it for our show. No, and actually, I think by then we were sponsored. I think I've got the timeline a little confused. Like I said, it's all pretty blurry. It was GPDC where we had talked to Evan, and we had gotten our like kind of the first steps towards getting a sponsorship. And then he said, "Hey, we'd like to sponsor you guys." And it was wild. I mean, you know, it's just crazy to like. In general, it's just crazy to get paid to do something you love. Mm-hmm. That just seems like, it almost seems like you're stealing money in a way. Cause it's like, well, all I'm doing is talking to, cause I like what I used to explain to like people like who didn't know about Magic. I would say, yeah, we get paid every week to talk. I get paid every week to talk to my friend about Magic on the phone. Mm-hmm. And they were like, wow, that's nuts. I'm like, yeah, I know. Right. You know, we really loved it. I don't know if we'd have a sponsorship if it wasn't for Joey, yeah. Because he did all the legwork at the time. I was on the show. I was a personality on the show. But like in terms of like the legwork and the promotion and stuff like that, I really, first of all, didn't know what I was doing. You know, I only got a Twitter in like my own Twitter, like summer of 2010, and it was just because I was spamming our Twitter feed with soccer stuff, but like I just didn't like Twitter and I didn't like social media and still really don't that much, but I get why it's useful. So Joey is really to credit for all that, like getting everything set up and making sure it all ran smoothly, and he edited the shows. So
So you're doing this. So you're doing the show for Star City. You eventually move on to doing coverage with them. And then I read that there was some conflict. There was some differing of opinions, and you were no longer doing coverage anymore.
Yeah. So I was part of the very first SCG Live team. Mm-hmm. It was me, Joey, Gavin, JVL,
Jacob Van Leeuwen.
Yes, and somebody else, and I don't remember who it was. It wasn't Jerry, because Jerry's playing. I don't remember who the fifth person was, to be honest. So we were doing the coverage. And the one thing that I think Star City learned very quickly, and I think the thing you're learning very quickly as well, is that we edit our podcast. Like, I tend to go off on tangents, and I tend to just be a little spacey sometimes, and sometimes I get on a kick. Like, I remember one of the coverage times, I think it was in Orlando, all I wanted to do was talk about British comedy. Like, that's all I wanted to talk about, and I was just like trying to talk about British comedy at every chance I could during the broadcast. And I think that really, like, so I'm a big wrestling fan, okay, and if you watch wrestling, there's somebody who will talk about what's going on in the ring, and then there's somebody else, color commentary, who will talk about other stuff, just stuff, just entertainment side of things. And like, that's kind of the way that Joey and I saw our pairing, was we saw it kind of as, you know, Joey's got the play-by-play, I've got the jokes, and that kind of thing. And you can see how well it worked when Joey and I were together on the coverage. Maybe it didn't, but I seem to think it worked, at least thinking about it. Maybe but I haven't watched it in years. But the way I made it sound makes it sound like I wasn't talking about Magic at all. I was definitely talking about Magic, but I was just really into jokes. Like, the one thing that I'll never forget is that I got an email from Owen Turtenwald, right? I got an email that was like, dude, I just want to tell you, you're my favorite SCG commentator. He's like, you pulled that. He's like, when you went down under the desk and found a slice of pizza on the floor and ate it, I died laughing. Like, cause like, I was just like talking. And I'm like, cause like what happened was they cut back to us. So I stuck the pizza under the table. And then I was like, what is that? And I like looked under the table, I was like, oh wow, pizza. And I just like picked it up and took a bite out of it. And like, I thought stuff like that was funny, and I don't know.
And Star City didn't.
And Star City wanted facts, 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 facts. It's all they wanted was facts. And it just seemed like they didn't want, I don't know. We had way different ideas of what the coverage should be. And then I remember the one point where I just decided I didn't even want to do it anymore. Was I was on coverage with Gavin Verhey, and Gavin Verhey was just not like, he was just not giving me anything in terms of like Joey and I could work with each other. We knew each other. He knew my sense of humor. He knew how to like transition away from jokes into other stuff, where it would just like Gavin would just give me like dead air. And like the moment I remember that I'll never forget was he rhymed something, and I said to him, I said, "Oh wow, you're a poet and you didn't even realize it." Right? Cuz I think that's funny. I'm like, "Poet, you didn't even realize it." It's one of my, I don't know, I think it's funny. And he goes, "Well, I am a poet." And I seriously just face out, just turned into the camera and just blank stare, like, what am I doing here? Like, what am I doing here? And it was hard. It was really hard to like to do.
Was it difficult because they liked what Joey was doing and they wanted to keep Joey and you were, you know, sort of not getting along with them? Like, was there any weirdness there that, you know, he was fine and you weren't and you were going to leave but he would still be there?
There's never been weirdness between Joey and
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. But you know what I mean? Like, you're, you know, in a way you're breaking up the band, you know?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's never, I mean, it never feels good
right.
to have someone else chosen over mm-hmm. you. That never feels good, but I always said to Joey was like, you know, a win for you is a win for the show, you know, and it was always about the show, you know, we didn't compromise who we were as individuals. We weren't like, we had different ideas of what things should be, and we have different personalities, and that's why Taps worked, you know. That's not to say it doesn't work now, but I mean, like, that's why Joey and I worked, is because we're two different people who have a different way of approaching things, and it works together. Whereas, like, I don't know, we weren't gonna change, or I wasn't gonna change who I was or how I approached things because they wanted me to, like. And then eventually I was like, why don't you just put me and Joey together? Why do you got to put me with Gavin? Like, why do you got to put me with JVL? Like I want to be with Joey. That's what works,
right.
You know? And they didn't want to put me and Joey together. They didn't want me at all is what the thing is. And yeah, I mean, like, and there's a thing about me is that, like, so my mother, and I don't know how much of this, you know, trickles down to me. I don't know how much of this affects me, but my mother is diagnosed with severe schizophrenia and acute paranoia, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, I don't speak to her anymore. We don't talk, and it's not just like, oh, she's sick, I don't want to deal with it. I've wasted so much of my energy trying to get her to get help. She refuses to take medication. She's just lost. Mm-hmm. She's gone. And I have a lot of anxiety. I don't know. I've never been to a psychiatrist, and I plan on going to one at some point. Soon, actually. But like, you know, there's a lot going on in my head. I don't trust people almost as a rule. And so on top of like, you know, on top of like everything that was going on, there's my, you know, what is this guy doing kind of thing? Like feeling like almost like I was set up by SCG to fail, like paired up with Gavin. And like they said, don't give him anything. You know what I mean? Like let him tank. Like, I mean, this is just stuff that goes through my head,
sure.
You know? You can ask Steven, like, how much I don't trust people. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, there's like people that like are on our team now. I'm not going to name any names, but people that are on our team now. I used to be like, I think that guy's shady. You know what I mean? Like just straight up. That's just like, I don't know. Like that's where my brain goes. So So it's really hard when you feel like they're setting you up for failure, whether or not it's imagined or not.
That's how you feel.
That's how I felt. And it was just, I don't know. It never feels good to be passed over for someone else. Anyway,
And
sorry.
that's okay. I was just going to say, to build off of that, you took a break from the show to move out of state and handle some things. And then you come back and you find that Joey's now on another show. What was that like?
Well, it was never a surprise. Nothing was ever a surprise, Joey was has always, and I have always, me and Joey have always been very clear with our communication in terms of, like, he's like, hey, these guys asked me to do this show, they want to do this podcast that's it was In Contention, which is a show that we both
Oh,
loved,
yeah.
like already. And then so my reaction was, oh, you're gonna be on In Contention? That's great. You know what I mean? Like, and then like it was like, oh, it's gonna be on Star City and it's gonna be the official, podcast of SG Live, and it was great. I mean, like, I can't be mad. I can't be upset about that. I chose to take a break. I chose to stop what I was doing. It wasn't like Joey pushed me out, It was that I chose to take a break because I knew that, like, where I was at right at that point, I was not in a good place and I needed to work on my life. I couldn't, the podcast felt like such an obligation, and I was so, like, not feeling it towards the end. And I was just so, Joey was like, and I don't even know if Joey knows this. Joey would say, hey, I know you like to smoke pot, but just don't smoke pot, before we record. And I'd say, okay. And I'd hit mute, hit a bowl, like all the time, and like, and it was, that was me, betraying the trust of my friend. And it was just stuff going on that, like, I was just in a really bad place.
And what made you decide to bring the show back then? So you come back and Joey's doing his own thing within Contention, which you're totally fine with, and In Contention I love. That was one of the shows that I listened to when I was first getting a feel for what the magic scene was like. So what was, what made you decide to bring it back? Did you think that you could? Like, were you, I'm not sure I can do this. Like, what was going through your mind?
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but I kill podcasts. So your show might never air again after
I feel
this.
the same
You might
way.
not, get to episode 112 because I was on the last episode of In Contention. Did you know
No, I
that?
did not.
I was on the very last episode. I was like, it wasn't my fault, right? Like, I think it was just totally a coincidence. But he was like, hey, you want to be on the show? I was like, yeah, sure,
I feel that way
okay,
with
so
my writers. Like, I know I had Mark Nestico on my show, and then a short time later, Mark Nestico announces he's leaving Star City Games. And then I have Carrie Oliver on the show, who was one of the only ladies writing for Channel Fireball. And then a short time later, she's like, I need to focus on school. And then she leaves. And yeah, for a while, I felt like the Black Widow as well, where I would have guests on my show. And then they would, I would toot them having these shows or these projects, and then they would suddenly not do them anymore.
right. So what happened was, I moved to Texas. I moved out to Denton, and I was kind of very casually playing. I was actually playing Yu-Gi-Oh more than I was playing Magic, to be honest. Yu-Gi-Oh has one of the worst communities I've ever experienced, and that's, I quit the game pretty much entirely based on an experience I had at a Yu-Gi-Oh tournament where I was supposed to play this kid. The kid had his deck stolen by someone in the room, so I got the win. The kid was like 10 years old. Everyone else in that room knew each other. Somebody knew who did it, and nobody was speaking up. And it was just like the most, like, awful thing. And I was just like, you know what? I gave the kid my prize packs, and I was like, see ya. And I left, and I never came back. So I was playing very casual. I think I played an Avacyn Restored pre-release, and that was probably the only event I played in until the Return to Ravnica pre-release. So I sold my entire collection at one point. I mean, I slowly, just to, like, get out of Baltimore and to get, everything squared away when I was here, I sold everything. I sold all my cards. I had about a dozen Magic cards at one point, in 2012. And what happened, you know, was I was here for a couple months. I met Katie, who, you know, quickly became my girlfriend, quickly became my fiance, and quickly became my wife. Everything happened very fast. And I don't, and I, there's nothing, you know, I think that's just how things go. It's funny, my buddy Ryan, which is, it just like wasn't even, I think I actually just found out a few weeks ago, he knew his wife for about as exactly as long as I knew, as I've known mine, which is like, okay, well, you know, because some people go, oh, you moved fast. And I'm like, yeah, no, I didn't, because it's right, you know, and if it's right, it's right. So anyway, I got down to Dallas. I was in Denton for a couple months living with someone I went to college with, and thinking that he was not crazy anymore. And then it turned out that he was just as crazy as he was before. And did some of the weirdest stuff I've ever seen. And I moved down to Dallas. There wasn't really a store I could get to reliably in Denton, but in Dallas, there was a store that opened up. So what happened was, I got this message on Facebook that was like, "Hey, there's a store that needs a TO," and I did TO stuff for years at Common Ground Games before I moved out to Denton, and they needed a TO, and I got in touch with them, and they was like, the looking at the Dallas map, it was like all these stores lined up outside of 635, like in the suburbs, and then Common Ground Games opens, and it's boom, center of the map in the city, and I was like, I can get to that. So that's basically why I started playing again, was because I was like, okay, well, I'll just do this TO thing for a little while, and you know, just do that, try to make a little extra money or to get some cards or just to play a little for fun, and then just slowly but surely got the bug, you know, just started like, oh, well, hey, that's a cool standard deck. Oh, maybe I'll throw that together real quick. Oh, hey, look at that. We're all going to Oklahoma City for a tournament. And it was just like, it kind of just snowballed real quickly into, I don't want a TO anymore. I want to play competitively. And it just totally was a different thing because I was never really a competitive player when I stopped playing in 2012. I wasn't super competitive, but I got real competitive. I was like, I want to play to win, and I'm just not gonna like let anyone stop me. And I top aided a PTQ for Theros, and that was the first PTQ I'd ever top aided. And just started playing and met some people that were really great, that I loved playing with. And you know, Steven and I just got along great. And for me, I guess at this point, I just can't imagine like just playing Magic and not like talking about it or doing something else with it besides just playing. So I was just starting to get the urge to bring the podcast back, and you know, it was like, Joey, do you want to bring it back? He's like, you know, well, I mean, I knew I didn't have to ask him, do you want to bring it back? Because he, you know, they stopped in contention. He really wanted to take a break from the game entirely. You know, he stopped with the SCG Live and all that stuff, and just taking a break. And because he's, you know, working on his engagement and marriage and doing all that life stuff. So he didn't want to. And I was like, well, you know, hey, you know, Steven, do you mind if Steve, because I got married in November
Congratulations.
of a, you know, a year ago. My anniversary was just when? It was just this past Sunday, so my 1 year anniversary. So, a year ago last year, Joey and Steven had met. Steven was in my wedding party, you know, because me and him really got along great. And I talked to Joey, and I was like, hey, do you know, you mind if I do the show with Steven? And you know, he's like, that's fine. You know, he's like, that's great. And I was like, the door is open, and that's something that you should know, is that the door is open to Joey's return. It's a matter of him wanting to do it, you know. We haven't ruled out him coming on the show for an episode, and almost happened a couple months ago. But then he was just like, I don't know, I don't really have anything to talk about. So, you know, it could happen. Don't get your hopes up because who knows? But we've talked about having him back on the show at some point, or if not, you know, permanently. At which point we would probably do a three-person show, or Steven. It's all up to Steven. I think we like Steven enough that he's welcome to stay.
How did your listeners respond to your return and the changes?
Crickets.
Yeah.
Crickets. This is the thing. So I've been out of the loop for a couple years, and so I don't know, like, how do people communicate online now? Do people still communicate through Twitter? I'm serious. Like, so I mean, so I had this thing where I was asking people questions on Twitter. I'd be like, "Hey, what's up?" And then like nobody would respond. And it was like on the Taps account, like, and I'd be like, "Hey, this," nobody would respond. I mean, we still get good numbers in terms of listeners, but it's just like no interaction anymore. When we used to do the thing, it was so much interaction. We used to get like so much good feedback and so many responses, and it would just be like, it was just a really cool thing. So I actually tried an experiment a couple months ago where instead of like politely asking people's opinions, I just started blurting like really major opinions on things on Twitter. I was like, "This card is the best set in this set, and it's not even close. Send." And we get hundreds of responses. I'm like, "So is that all people do online anymore? Is just yell their opinion is right at each
Pretty
other?"
much.
And I was just like, "Wow, this is just so different from what I remember." And so I've been struggling with that. Okay, so most of what we've gotten from people is positive in terms of like, "Hey, Steven's doing a great job," or this and that. But if somebody says, "Oh, I really wish you'd I wish you'd put Joey back on the show. I miss the old Taps," I'd write back to them and be like, "Hey, what do you miss?" No response. I'm like, "So somebody just wanted to yell at me." Like, so that's all people are doing online is yelling at each other now? Like, I don't know. I'm a little frustrated by Twitter and by just social media again. Like, I don't know. It just feels like a black hole of opinions. And I actually had a moment a couple months ago where I realized, and this is for my personal Facebook, this isn't so much like, about, promoting the show, but like what I realized is that Twitter, Facebook is 1 billion people or so, right? And there's no way that there are 1 billion experts in the world of on every single topic that ever happens, right? Every single news story, there can't possibly be 1 billion experts in the world. And I just got so sick of, I realized that like we're getting our news from other people's opinions of the news. Like we're not reading the news to pursue it for ourselves, and we're not forming our own opinions. Our basis for what we know in the world starts with somebody's opinion of what's going on in the world. And who knows what story they read or whose opinion they got that from. So I took my Facebook friends list down from like 370 to like 58. And like I can go on Facebook for 45 minutes without there being an update, and it's like the most beautiful silence I've ever heard. And I just realized, I was like, wow, we're really like as a society becoming dumber because we're only getting our news from other people's opinions. It was just a really crazy revelation to have, like just to realize that like there can't be that many people who know everything about everything. Like there's no way. So it's, I don't know.
I want to go back to Revelations because you're in a much better place than you were when you first started the show. I read that when you first started the show, you were living with your mom again. You indicated that you might have been suicidal. Would you say that that was your bottom? Like you're clean now. You've been clean for about 2 years. What
Let's
turned it all
do it.
around? Like, what was the moment where you were like, I got to stop this?
What happened was I started dating my eventual wife. And at the time I was still drinking, I was still smoking weed. And what happened was she had gotten sick, so they had given her some like hydrocodone or something for whatever reason, right? And I went, "Oh, cool, let me have one, So she gives me one, I take it. And then a couple hours, 6 hours later, I'm like, "Oh, cool, let me have another one." So I take another one. After like 2 or 3 days, I'd taken more of them than she had. And I was just like, And then I'm digging through like some stuff. I was helping her clean up, and I found like a bag that had like some pills in it, I guess from like an old prescription. And I went, "Oh, sweet, can I take these home?" Right? I was just like so casual, and she goes, "Actually, I'm going to take you home because this is over. I'm done. You need help." And like I just was sitting there. I was like, "Oh my!" I was like, "Is this really what I'm doing with my life?" You know? I was like, "Is this really what's happening?" And I made a decision right then and there. I was like, "Okay, well, I'm not gonna smoke weed anymore. I'm like, I'm done doing drugs," and I stopped. I stopped completely, and I stopped from that day forward, which is just like I don't know. So it just takes a. I guess sometimes there's like a big event that happens that just makes you have to change everything. And I realized I came to a crossroads. I either have to like doing drugs is my life or being sober is my life. And there's no middle ground. So I chose to be sober.
And how did you get out of that?
So I was very good at trading. I was very good at, and it wasn't even like, I wouldn't even like try to rip people off. What I would do is I would just trade things at Star City prices. And then, but I would trade things that wouldn't sell on buy lists for things that would. And then I would just buy list stuff off. And then I would just lather, rinse, and repeat. And I would just kept doing that. Were you gonna say something?
No, I'm listening.
Oh, sorry. It sounded like you were about to say something. So that sort of thing would happen. And I was doing okay doing that, making a little bit of money. Eventually, Sheldon started having me work like at the comic book shop itself a little bit, not like a lot, not making a lot, but just enough to have a little extra money than like, you know, $40 a week. So that was working out a little. I was able to piece things together, and then I got a job at Barnes and Noble. So I worked at Barnes and Noble years and years ago, like 2003 till 2004. And then I was wandering around downtown one day. And I was like, "Oh, I wonder if Barnes and Noble's, you know, I wonder if Barnes and Noble's hiring, because I used to work there. I can get down here pretty easy." So I go over there, and like half the people I worked with 4 years ago, 5 years ago, were still there. And I was like, "Hey, y'all hiring?" They're like, "Yeah." And like I was able to get a job within like 2 weeks of asking. So I got a job, just, it was a job. And then one of my friends, a guy named Travis, who kind of had a falling out with when I moved, was like, "Hey, you know, I'm looking for a roommate or whatever," and I was like, "Hey, you know, I'll come live with you." So basically, that's just, you know, and so it was a number of fortunate events, and I'm just able to hodgepodge some money together, and it was enough to get out, and I was able to sustain with with selling cards and you know working a little retail, and then we got the SCG live gig, around that time too, which was like 2010, 2011, I think. So that was a little extra money, and just you know I don't know, just a lot of little pieces just all slammed together to make barely a living,
So was
but
it the
enough.
responsibility that turned you around? Like, you know, feeling like you had something to live for or to look forward to?
Yeah, you know, it's just really easy to just get caught up in a cycle of depression, you know. And it's not, I'm not sitting there saying like, "Oh, I just got over it," you know, because you know there are people very close to me that live with major depression, and I'm not trying to trivialize that struggle because it's a really serious struggle that people go through every day. You know, and I'm not saying I can't even say I'm over, you know, that. But I've, you know, I'm at a place now where I feel good. And I don't think you ever get over it, you know. I don't think you ever really get over it. But it was made easier when I was able to get a job, to get a little bit of a sense of normalcy, you know. Like piecing money together is money, but it's not normal. You know, and like a sense of normalcy really, you know, I think it helped, but it doesn't mean that like all of a sudden I had no more anxiety, I had no more depression. You know, I mean, like I had days in that house where I was slept for 16 hours. I wouldn't get out of bed, you know. And it got to a point, around like, you know, winter of 2012 or 2011, I'm sorry. Winter of 2011, I had a moment. I don't really want to get into the moment, but I said to my like to I remember New Year's Eve, I was talking to my dad's friends because we went to like a New Year's Eve party, and like we went and I said to my friend, like, 'cause one of my friends hung himself a couple years ago. And I think it was like somebody broke up with him and he hung himself. And I said to my dad's friend, I was like, I don't think I'd ever hang myself over a girl, but I understand. You know, I said that, and I just said it, and I don't know, I was really drunk. And then like a couple weeks later, I get a call from my dad, and he's like, listen, I don't like, are you okay? You know, like, and I was just like, what did I say? I didn't even remember saying it. You know, and like, and it just got, and he was like, you know, why, you know, what's up? You know, what's going on? And I just started talking to my dad. When I talked to my dad, I realized I was like, I gotta get out of here. Like, I'm just, this is not like where I should be in my life, you know. And so I just started like, all I knew was I needed to leave Baltimore. So I was looking at, and this is how much I wanted to leave Baltimore. So the two places I started looking on Craigslist for apartments were Portland, Maine, and Fargo, North Dakota, because they were, to me, they were the most alien places I could come up with that were also like cities. I was like, these places just seem as foreign to me as possible. But at the same time, my grandfather has had Alzheimer's. My grandfather passed away around, I think, December 30th of last year from Alzheimer's. You know, my dad's been eaten up about it because my dad lives in Texas. He's lived here since 2003. And I could tell my dad was just like so torn up that he wasn't there for him, you know, that he wasn't closer to his dad, that he had to like hear about this stuff from afar. He got to see him a couple times, but it wasn't like he was there every day. He wasn't there at the end, you know. And my dad's 55, 56. He's young. My dad's really young. My dad's not going anywhere anytime soon. But when it came down to like where I wanted to move, like I was just like, you know, I don't want to have to be sitting here 30 years from now and being in the same position my dad's in right now. You know, I want to know that I'm close to my dad and that I can be there if he needs me. And just so I want to make sure that like I get to spend as much time with my dad as I possibly can, because I love him. And like he's, you know, with my grandmother gone, and that's the craziest thing is that like my grandmother found out she had cancer in December of 2011. I moved in April of 2012, and she still had not told me. I found out in June of 2012. She didn't want anyone to stop what they were doing for her. Like I could, you know what I mean? Like she could have kept me in Baltimore. Like I could have stayed, but she knew I needed out, and she knew, or at least I'm assuming, you know, that she knew I needed to be somewhere else. So she let me leave without telling me, so I wouldn't drop everything and stay around. So I was out here and I heard the news, and you know, I couldn't get back there until after she was gone. And that's the only reason why I was able to even afford a plane ticket was because my dad bought me one. You know,
And you
but
credit being clean with this straight edge. So what exactly does that mean?
so straight edge is a much maligned ethos that basically means that you don't drink alcohol, you don't do drugs, you know, you don't harm your body with drugs, and you don't have promiscuous sex is pretty much what that means. So in other words, it's like, you know, being the most boring person on earth. No, but really though, like it's just about what it really is about is it's about being who you are, and like I'm trying to think of a good way to put it. Just not poisoning your body with things, not harming yourself intentionally, you know? Now, there are people who interpret it a million different ways, okay? To me, like, I don't, if I were prescribed something for my anxiety, I wouldn't look at that as violating that. Now, some people might, and you know what? That's fine. I don't care, like, who interprets things differently, because it's my life, you know? But it's not like, oh, cigarettes don't count, you know, or something weird like that. Cigarettes don't get you high, so they don't count. Like, that's different. But like if I were to get prescribed like Valium or something for anxiety, or if I needed to take Valium for anxiety, I would do it, and I wouldn't think twice about it. And if that doesn't make me straight edge, well, then I'm not straight edge, and I don't care. Because I think that one thing that's important, one thing that is like true to straight edge is your health, you know? And you can't be healthy if you're dead. So if, you know, if there's medicines that someone has to take to keep them alive, then I'm all for that. You know, if they legalize marijuana, would I prescribe that for my anxiety? No. You know, no, because that's stupid. But I think it means different things to different people. And I do believe in, you know, not drinking alcohol. I believe in not taking drugs, and I believe in, you know, monogamy. I'm a firm believer in those things.
And you know, so what's in store for you next? You know, where do you see the podcast going? Where do you see yourself going in the next year or two? Like, what are your plans?
Well, you know, right now I'm happily married. We're working some stuff out on there that you know, I mean, everything's work, you know, there's life's a struggle, you know. Nothing comes easy. Nothing comes without hard work. There's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that, you know, that I would never say on this show, but we're, you know, we're doing our best right now to make our lives as easy as it can be, as they can be. You know, as much as like I was referring to working retail as treading water, I mean, we're doing the show, we're playing Magic, we're taking Magic more seriously than I ever have. We're going to GP San Antonio in a couple weeks. We're
Nice.
playing in that. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm playing Green Black Constellation, and
Yay.
I highly recommend it. I played the deck for the first time Tuesday night, which is bad because I got a GP to play in 2 weeks, but I've been really busy.
Isn't it fun?
It is so
Yeah.
powerful. And we can talk a little bit more about that after the show. You know, I mean, we're just I'm living my life, and I'm having a really good time, and I mean, you know, just trying to get things together and make things work. You know, I mean, nothing's easy. Like, you know, you got lots of people who are in, you know, in really good positions in terms of finances or whatever. Like, I mean, Stevenson is like works in stocks. Like, Stevens like the 1%. But like,
Is he single?
I say that in the nicest way. No, he's
Oh,
not.
crap.
I say that in the nicest way. But you know, like Steven does not know of financial trouble in terms of like currently. He may have in the past, but he certainly doesn't now. And there are a lot of people who have things really easy. I don't, you know. I mean, we're still scraping by,
Would
but
you know what to do if you did have them easy? Because you've gone through so much adversity in your life and you've gone through so much struggle. You know, if you were to reach a point in your life where you didn't have anything to worry about anymore, would you know what to do with yourself?
Sure. Yeah, relax my shoulders a little bit and like my back out. Maybe get my teeth worked
Well, I
on.
ask because, you know, there are some people that that's all they know. And when you, and I admit that I'm guilty of this a little bit, you know, when you do have that peace and quiet, it freaks you out. And you almost feel compelled to screw things up because that's all you know. And you're like, wait a minute, my bills are paid, nobody's mad at me, everything's going well, this can't be right. And you, you know, you subconsciously start to screw things up for yourself. And I'll admit I've done that before. And, you know, I know some people that just don't know any better, where, you know, they need the obstacles, they need the drama, they need the tension. You know, they just don't know what to do with peace and quiet.
Yeah. I think I'd be good. Like, I don't know. I'm not at the point in my life where if I wound up with $10,000, I would buy all the cocaine. You know what I mean? I don't think I'd actually buy any of the cocaine. Mm-hmm. So, hey, $10,000 more. I mean, like, I think that, I don't know. It's tough to say, you know, there are creature comforts that, that people, you know, will turn to right away in terms of like luxury items and stuff. And maybe I'd get some of those things, but like, I don't know. I'm so boring nowadays, like in terms of like, and I don't mean even boring in like a bad way, but like I've just kind of mellowed out so much, despite how little I've made that evident. I have, you know, like I really, like the other day I was supposed to go out to this concert with Steven, and it was Run the Jewels, and man, it's a show I really wanted to see. I had a ticket lined up, I could have went, and like, I got to work that morning and I was like, I'm not feeling like being in a crowd tonight. And I recognized it and I said to Steven, I'm like, you know anyone who could take that ticket? Because I just really don't want to go to a show. And I just came home and like I was on my couch at midnight and somebody posted a picture from the concert that was going on at midnight. And I was like, wow, I'm so glad I'm on my couch looking at that picture instead of experiencing it. So, I mean, I think that'd be fine. Like if I was in a better situation financially, I think that I would be just fine. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's like, you know, I don't know.
But it sounds like you're happy. You sound like you're definitely in a better place, and you've come a long way.
I have, you know, it's been a journey. It's been crazy. I have no idea. Like, I just can't even imagine. Like, when people come up to me like about the show, and they're like, hey, I love your show. I clam up so hard, or I'll be like, yeah, well, I like totally like, yeah, well, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like, maybe it's just me not giving myself enough credit. Like, there are moments I'll have where I'll be totally like, we were the best podcast out back in the day. Like, I'll like totally like have those puff my chest out moments. But most of the time, I'm just like, I don't even know what people see in us. Like, I don't know. It's really weird. But I'm just glad that I was able to get through the stuff that I got through over the last couple of years, and I'm just really glad that I came out of the other side of it, happy, mm-hmm. and healthy. Because I could have very well have gone the other way.
So, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, my cell phone number is, no, I'm just kidding. On Twitter, I am OMGWTFBHJFTW. Blame Big Head Joe. Our podcast is UMTGTaps@gmail.com. We're available every other Thursday except for this week. We're available tomorrow, or Friday, rather, on legitmtg.com. And I'm on Instagram, YoMTGTaps on Instagram, mm-hmm. which is just my personal Instagram. But again, Big Head Joe was taken, probably by me, and I forgot my password. Who knows? And I think those are the main things. Don't bother adding me on Facebook. I'll decline it. Not you, Aaron. You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
But I pretty much decline everybody at this point.
And where can they find the show?
At legitmtg.com and on our website, iwantmymtg.com.
Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. I'm really glad that I've been given the opportunity to get to know you. I know my listeners feel the same. There was a lot of excitement when I announced that you were coming on the show, and I don't think that you disappointed. So thanks again for doing this.
I hope not.
And if anybody's enjoyed what they've heard here on The Deck to Use, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck to Use. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can also email the show directly at TheDeckToUse@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye!